will now hear in re interest of Nadia S.
May it please the court, my name is Zoe Wade and I represent the appellant, DeWanda Smiley, who is bringing this appeal of the termination of her parental rights. Specifically, she is contesting the juvenile court's determination that she abandoned her two oldest children, such that reasonable efforts to reunify her family were not required. She's also contesting the finding that reasonable efforts were made and have failed to correct the situation that brought her family into the juvenile court system, that she substantially and continuously abused or neglected her children, and then finally, that termination of her parental rights was in any of her three children's best interest. The facts are essentially as follows. Ms. Smiley, in the fall of 2008, found herself in quite a predicament. She was homeless. She was unable to care for her children. She left her two oldest children. Her youngest daughter had not yet been born. She left her two children, Nadia and Tobias, with an individual that she believed would be able and willing to care for her children while she essentially got back on her feet. That did not turn out to be the case. The state filed a petition in September of 2008. That petition was adjudicated in December of 2008, and she pled to the allegations that she was unable at that time to meet her children's needs, to provide them appropriate care and support, and that she did not have safe and stable housing at that time to care for her children. The remaining allegations at that point had been dismissed. A disposition hearing was set for approximately 3.5 months later, March 27th of 2009. At that point, the Department of Health and Human Services submitted its case plan and court report that recommended that she undergo a pretreatment evaluation. However, less than a month after that, Ms. Smiley gave birth to her youngest daughter, and two significant things happened at that point. One, she admitted that with respect to her youngest daughter, she had been using cocaine during her pregnancy, and additionally, she was arrested at the hospital for forgery offenses that she had committed the summer prior, before her two oldest children had been removed. While she was at the hospital, she did contact her caseworker. She did apprise him of her circumstances. She spoke to him about potential placements for her youngest daughter. He communicated to her, asked her whether or not she would be willing to undergo evaluations at her place of incarceration, which he testified that she was willing to do. She was incarcerated temporarily at the Douglas County Corrections between her arrest on or around the 20th of April and until the 14th of May. In the interim, on the 30th of April, she had two hearings, but one, she was sentenced on her felony charges. Her second hearing was on the protective custody hearing with respect to her youngest daughter. At that point, she voluntarily agreed to undergo a chemical dependency treatment, and the court ordered by agreement that she would undergo that. She was transported to York facility on the 14th of May. While she was there, she underwent her 30-day observation and evaluation. Following that, she made application to participate in an intensive drug and alcohol treatment program. She signed up for a parenting class. She applied to get into a work ethic program. The exact contours of that program are not clear, but she did testify that there was a chemical dependency aspect to it. And she also obtained employment within the correctional facility in the kitchen, which she testified would be beneficial to her in order to make money so that she could afford to make direct calls to her children. While all of this was going on the 12th of June, the state filed a motion to terminate her rights to both her two oldest children and her youngest children, so two separate petitions were filed. With respect to the determination of abandonment, this court has defined the six-month period for observation rather strictly as the continuous six-month period prior to the filing. During that period of time, Ms. Smiley had made numerous efforts to contact her children by telephone, by contacting her father, who was the foster parent for her two older children. Over this period of time, her caseworker testified that she made numerous attempts to try to reach him by telephone as well, but she was unable to do so. And the last time that she had face-to-face contact with her two oldest children was on December 25th of 2008, which is less than the six-month period for purposes of abandonment. And I would argue that for that reason alone, the court erred in finding that she had abandoned her children for that six-month period. This court has also said that the question of abandonment is largely one of intent, and that an extended absence from a child's life is not in and of itself sufficient, that the evidence must clearly show that the parent has acted in a manner evidencing a settled purpose to be rid of all parental obligations and forego all parental rights, together with a complete repudiation of parenthood and abandonment of parental rights and responsibilities. And I would argue, while it's certainly the efforts that were made by DeWanda Smiley during this period of time are certainly not exemplary, the fact is they do not evidence a settled purpose to be rid of her obligations as a parent. They evidence that notwithstanding the tumultuous circumstances she was involved in, that she still made efforts to reach out and make contact with her children and with her caseworker.
Ms. Wade,
yes.
Assume for the moment that we throw in with you on the abandonment. What about subsection 2?
And are you is that the substantially continuously neglected?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is probably the most nebulous of all of the statutory bases for termination. There's a wide variety of factual grounds that can support termination, and I'm not familiar with a case that has found substantial and continuous neglect on circumstances such as these. Additionally, just as a side note, that even if it's true that a statutory basis could be found there, it still doesn't excuse reasonable efforts from the department, which is another issue that she is contesting. But nonetheless, I think, you know, the court did not make particular findings of fact. I think the two probably most relevant issues, you know, at the time of the hearing are the fact that she's incarcerated and the fact that she has an admitted drug problem. But I would note that on the record, there is no evidence of what, if any, impact that either of those facts had on any of her children. And I'm not suggesting that there was no impact, but there simply was no evidence in that it affected her ability to care, or that her interaction with her children, her relationship with her children, her parenting of her children was compromised. What the evidence does show is that during...
She'd lost her job. She was homeless. Sounds like she was a coke addict. And so she's not parenting the older two children for, what, close to a year before she goes to prison. And, of course, she's not going to be able to parent them while she's in prison. And the youngest child, she's doing coke while she's regularly while she's pregnant, and including within hours of delivery.
Certainly those things are borne by the record. I would point out
they kind of seem to fall within subsection 2.
Well, I would note that in In Re Destiny C, this court found that the person's individual incarceration was not sufficient to prove subsection 2, where there was no evidence of the impact on the children, when the evidence suggested that the children were being appropriately cared for. So I would note that there is an absence of evidence, but I would also note that when you get further down into the issue of the best interests of this child, at the time of the hearing, she was participating. She had undergone her evaluations. She had been arrested as of approximately the 20th of April, had undergone essentially a forced sobriety, and was participating in services to address these issues. With respect to the nature of the incarceration and the length of her incarceration, the nature of incarceration is a nonviolent offense that occurred prior to the removal of her children. There's some testimony that her expected release date is in 2012, but she testified that she might be eligible for parole as soon as September of this year. And given that short period of time, and in addition, the absence of any evidence that the permanency objectives of these children are in any way served by terminating her parental rights, that they're in any way better off by being placed up for adoption when she's taking these steps, it's at least reasonable to assume that she may be paroled within the near future and be able to resume.
The steps are happening while she's in prison.
That's correct.
And that, I think, you know, that lessens the value, at least I think in the big picture, of those steps. I mean, you know, if you're in prison, you probably want to do something.
I agree.
And I don't minimize it, but I'm just saying, well, I guess I do minimize it. I mean, I think it's good that she was doing those steps, but none of those things, or very few of those things, were happening prior to her going to the penitentiary.
That is true, and one of the things I would point out just is that the prison system, it's an unfortunate situation that she has, of her own free will, gotten herself into.
And that's what the cases say, too, as far as jail. I mean, there's cases, as you point out, that, you know, that can't be the only consideration, but if someone, you know, you make that decision, and it's like, sentencing the children to, being in, as I think one of the cases talk about, like, being in Siberia, you're just not going to be able to take any really direct control with those children when you're in jail, and then you make that initial choice. And so that can't be the only factor, but that with the other factors are something certainly that you can consider under neglect.
Certainly. Can I make one final?
Yes, you can respond to my statement.
Thank you. I would just like to point out one of the issues is the timeliness of the matter. That a rehabilitation plan for Ms. Smiley was not adopted until the 30th of March. The motion to terminate her rights was filed 2.5 months later. The facts in this case are undisputed, and I think the issues are fairly clear before this court. But the fact that this is an individual who is obviously struggling, obviously not making good parental choices, while that is true, it's true of essentially all parents who come into the juvenile court system. And so I would argue that this individual hasn't really been afforded an adequate opportunity to remedy these situations. And the fact that she is doing that in prison, while that's certainly not ideal, prison does serve a rehabilitative function as well. And it might, in this particular case, be exactly what could be the turning point for this particular individual. But we don't know, because this decision essentially has been rushed to the end. And I see I'm long since out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wade. How much time did we allow? Would you please add that to the appellee's time? Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court. My name is Amy Shuckman, Deputy Douglas County Attorney. Your Honors, I think in this case, what we have is a mother who just doesn't want to be a parent. And that's evident from the facts from the very first hearing until the time of the termination. Her two oldest children she placed with a friend and never came back for them. Her child that was born during this case in April of 2009, Dazana, she called the caseworker immediately prior to giving birth to this child, informed him that she would not or could not care for Dazana. She left right after the birth against medical advice, and the caseworker was unable to reach her at that point. She chose to leave rather than spending those couple of days in the hospital bonding with her newborn infant. Moreover, this mother has never availed herself of supervised visitation. She testified at the hearing that the reason she would not visit with her children pursuant to the supervised visitation company was, first, she didn't feel her visits needed to be supervised, even though she was homeless, unemployed, and using crack cocaine several times a week while pregnant with her child, Dazana. And the most important reason, she didn't want to visit because she didn't want to deal emotionally with the visitation. She did not want to visit with her children and have to see them upset, and that she was worried it would be hard on her to visit with her children. Didn't consider the emotional effect potentially that could happen with not seeing her own children, what they would be going through. Instead, she focused on herself and chose not to visit with her own children. Abandonment, as defined by this court, is a intentional withholding from a child without just cause or excuse, a parent's presence, care, love, protection, maintenance, and the opportunity for the display of parental affection for the child. This is a parent who did not participate in visitation, had one visit in Christmas of 2008 by coincidence. The foster parent for the two older children testified that he went over to a relative's for Christmas, and it just so happened that the mother was present. This was not a planned visitation, and since the birth of her child, her youngest child, Dazana, never once visited with that child. Her excuse, her belief that she didn't need supervised visitation, and also that she did not want to deal emotionally with having a visitation, that's simply not excusable. But her testimony, I believe, shows her intent of putting her own needs before her own children's. In addition, from the time period of December 12, 2008 to June 12, 2009, the foster parent for the two oldest children testified that there were a handful of phone calls between the children and the mother, one of which had to be terminated because she was arguing with someone in the background and he was concerned about his granddaughter and witnessing her mother arguing with another individual when she should have been spending that time focused on her children. And in addition, the foster parent testified he was concerned because the mother was putting the children on hold during these phone calls. I believe that these, that one, visitation by coincidence and the handful of phone calls are merely token efforts pursuant to In Re Interest of Sunshine A. It does not display, the mother did not display a continuing interest in her children or a genuine effort to maintain communication and association with her children. I believe that this is an individual who is choosing not to parent, is putting her own needs before those of her children. And yes, although while incarcerated, she may be making some effort. She may be on a waiting list for a treatment program and completed a chemical dependency evaluation. However, even after completing that chemical dependency evaluation, she never signed a release so that the caseworker could view it. The caseworker was unable to contribute any collateral information to that evaluation. And again, these efforts were made while she was incarcerated. What I think the court should focus on is what this mother did with the 8 or 9 months while she had her freedom. And what she did while she had her freedom was not visit with her children, not maintain employment, not maintain housing. She simply did nothing while she had the chance to work with the court, to work with the department. And for all of those reasons, I would request that you affirm the juvenile court's decision terminating parental rights of all three children. And if there are any questions?
We have no questions.
Thank you.
Ms. Wade was out of time. Thank you, counsel. You are excused, and the case is submitted. Next.